Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to the second edition of our show. I'm going to stop the music because we're short on time. Anyways, we're short on time. We have our regular caller, Albert, on the line. We're expecting possibly Don and the North Carolinian caller and John for sure. I'm going to read a verse. I just want to briefly mention to the audience that our first topic tonight was about the Somalian national who relocated to the United States who is Islamic. He stabbed 9 people in Minnesota in a mall during a recreational time because they were non-Muslim. In other words, he was hostile to the Minnesota population for possibly not accepting or tolerating Islam because St. Cloud, Minnesota has had a lot of friction between white residents and new refugees from African countries. So I'm going to read a verse from Proverbs 2 quickly about the right way to respond to people who you do not know, foreigners. Wisdom will save you from the ways of wicked men, from men whose words are perverse. Verse Proverbs 2:12-15, I forgot to mention the verse. Who have left the straight paths to walk in dark ways, who delight in doing wrong and replace in the perverseness of evil, whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their way. Now, as Christians, it doesn't matter who people are or where they come from. As Christians, you're supposed to be on the receiving end, accepting all people, showing love, feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, administering to the sick and the prisoners. God created all people, so you are not supposed to display non-tolerance to people who are different than you. Hebrews 13:2 says, "Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby you have entertained angels unaware." So with that, there's no other callers, but Albert has a friend who would like to speak. The topic tonight is called Homegrown Terrorism in Minnesota. Are you afraid of your neighborhood changing? Do you fear people who are different from you? And if you are part of a majority, whether it's white or something else, do you have a type of scrutiny where you do not accept others? Good evening to the show, Albert.
Hey, yeah, I'll go ahead. Go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us what you think
sure.
about that situation.
Well, my name is, oh, your friend, you mean?
Yeah, I'm talking to my friend, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. My name's Jane. I'm the host of the show. We have 3 co-hosts. Friend, why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Brian from L.A.
And are you and Albert both in the car business together, or how do you know each other?
More like gaming business.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
my son is a gamer. He's 18 years old, so I can relate to that. Just to clue you guys in, before you called in tonight, we were talking about the African diaspora. You know, there's been a lot of civil wars in Africa. Since 1985, a lot of Africans have emigrated to Minnesota from Liberia, Ethiopia, and Somalia, which recently had a war within the last 10 years. So what's happening is neighborhoods that have existed in the U.S. for over 200 years, some people are not accepting other ethnic people, especially those who differ in religion. So there was a stabbing at a mall Saturday in St. Cloud, Minnesota. There were also 2 explosions in New York and New Jersey, but they don't think that those were terror-driven explosions. So I just want to ask you, what's on your mind, if you want to comment on this topic or something else?
like, what's my input on the situation and how I feel about it?
Well, you know, let's just put it this way, Brian. America's had a lot of commotion the last 6 months with, first of all, a major political candidate who is very blatant about his racial opinions versus other people that Albert supported, like Bernie Sanders, who didn't make it to the final cut of the endorsement of the Democratic Party. Then we've had at least 3 to 4 homegrown terrorism acts in Atlanta, San Bernardino, and now St. Cloud, Minnesota. So I'm just wondering what your take is on ethnic tension in America and the political climate right now in this election cycle.
Well, I feel like both nominees, as you call them, I feel like they're both shrewd.
Right? Do you think that...
Yeah, they're both corrupted, yeah.
Do you think it's gone to the point in America that the machine network of political candidacy and the media compliance, like we're never going to be able to redeem ourselves and start over at the ground level of ethically run businesses, or even usurping the outrageous college costs? I mean, where is our country going, basically?
Well, small businesses are gone. There's going to be mainly big corporations opening up more, as is now.
Yeah, I do know, like, even in Minnesota, there's still a remnant of small businesses. In fact, 2 or 3 of my friends from Los Angeles, where I lived for 13 years, actually 17 total, but 2 different time periods, a lot of my friends who have startup businesses are foreigners. One is from Bangladesh. A couple of them are shop owners in downtown L.A. I wouldn't say that small businesses are totally dead, but places like Best Buy have bought out a lot of the computer hardware and industry as far as distribution. And I would say there's more diversity in the movie distribution business now with Netflix, Hulu, and other places. But, I mean, I still think there's some hope for business diversity, but not as far as where money is concentrated. But I know Albert must have at least one thing on his mind, because he always does. So, Albert.
Well, quick info about that. Because Bernie Sanders himself on television has said that small businesses are declining. There's more small businesses closing than they are opening. So that's, you know, he has said that, and, you know, that is a for sure thing on the record.
The state that Bernie Sanders comes from is a rather provincial area. They only have one major city. So I forgot to tell you, Albert, during that Snowden movie, at the very end they had a quote from Hillary and Bernie, and Hillary condemned Edward Snowden's actions, saying that he stole confidential U.S. information, and Bernie Sanders defended Snowden by saying that he was just somebody who was trying to make right what was wrong and, you know, like, release that information in order for people to become aware of how people were being surveilled. So I know that's a little off topic, but I just thought I'd throw that in there, that they added those quotes at the end of the movie.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very interested in watching that movie. You know, it's something very interesting I want to look at. I don't get around that Hollywood movie. But anyways, I mean, it is a Hollywood movie. So, you know, like I said before, I mean, Hollywood movies are probably around 50%, you know, accurate. But, you know, as long as they got some cut scenes like the ones you just mentioned, I mean, you can't edit those. I mean, those videos they got is from the campaign clips themselves. So, you know, there's no editing there, you know. That's a good part to put in the movie. So I like to actually put that in the movie. I mean, Bernie Sanders, you know, did protect, I mean, like you said, Edward Snowden's about that, but now Bernie Sanders is protecting Hillary Clinton, and, you know, not necessarily protecting her emails, but Bernie Sanders has said that enough with the emails already. He doesn't want to hear the media talk about Hillary Clinton's emails, and he's supporting Hillary Clinton for president, and, you know, all that good stuff, of course, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, he's totally supporting Hillary Clinton, and even with all her email scandals and everything. So on one hand, he defends Edward Snowden about his emails, but on the other hand, he supports Hillary Clinton's emails and, you know, the email scandal, even though, you know, Hillary Clinton, you know, got away with it because she's got special connections, and Edward Snowden had to run out of town. Otherwise, he would be sent to Guantanamo Bay.
But Ed, there's only one major difference. Ed Snowden downloaded the files, removed them from the secured site in Hawaii where they were supposed to remain, and defected from the United States. So even he said himself in an interview that the die was already cast, that his lowest expectation was that he would be arrested, and he expected severe punishment. Luckily, the Hong Kong government, which is an arm of the Chinese government but slightly independent, did let him go through that airport without complying to the United States authorities, and he was able to make it to Russia without getting caught. So one thing I want to mention is I don't think Bernie Sanders is necessarily a yes man all the way. It's just that when you really think about it, he wants to join the Democratic forces to eliminate Trump, because Trump is within a 5% margin of winning. And with people's unpredictability in voting, maybe it is bigger, we don't really know, but people do fear Donald Trump getting elected.
Brian, what do you think about Donald Trump?
Me? I think
no, I'm asking
Brian
can no,
comment.
Brian, what do you think about Donald Trump?
Well, I can't say I agree with any of Donald Trump's or Hillary's input.
Let's do the individual Donald Trump first. Do you think that he's raw, unforgiving, and what do you have to say about him never outlining specifically any policy objectives at all?
I think Trump would be a good nominee. Just I feel he words his like what he's trying to say, he words it incorrectly, so everyone takes it in a misconceptive way.
Right. Do you think that his common language and reduced intellect is really just an indirect appeal to the blue-collar class?
I'm not too familiar with all that. I mean,
is that, you know how, like, he doesn't really mince his words. He's not eloquent. But what he's only trying to say basic things like build a wall with no real nuts and bolts ideas on how he's going to do it, who's going to pay for it, and if it will be effective. As
well,
everybody knows, he
went into the election without an intent to even win. His intention was just to boost the media for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Brian,
the one thing, Brian, what do you think? You think Donald Trump is racist against Mexicans?
I think he's racist towards all immigrants. I don't think it's just Mexicans individually.
See, I think he has a white elitist mentality where he's never suffered or really had to take major risks outside his secure bubble. Even all those business deals he did, he had plenty of collateral and backup, and when he, like, shortchanged hotel workers and contractors for businesses that failed. He just went into bankruptcy. He didn't have to pay a really big price. So it kind of did you guys hear about that, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys this week, Mark Cuban, who
no.
He offered Donald Trump $10 million just to outline his specific policy objectives, that he said he'd give $10 million either for an interview, and then he could Trump could give it to the charity of his choice. And then he changed his mind. I'm sorry, he's the owner of the Dallas Mavericks. He changed his mind and said that he would just give him the $10 million if he could just definitively outline his policy objectives for whatever he's trying to do. But, of course, Donald Trump didn't take the bait, and he called Mark Cuban stupid.
Well, as you were mentioning about, you know, Donald Trump takes risks because, you know, he's got the collateral and everything, right? As you were mentioning that, I wanted to mention about the too big, too fail, you know. You know, a lot of billionaires already know the motto, the, you know, too big to fail, too big to jail, you know. And so, you know, when big companies fail, they always get, you know, bounced back up by, you know, taxpayer money, you know, the middle class taxpayer money, you know, but us, the, you know, the average, you know, working man, taxes that go off to pay, you know, these big companies because they, you know, they did mistakes. Sometimes it's mistakes they shouldn't have done, but anyways, they get bailed out anyways. And so, you know, all the, you know, billionaire friends know this, you know, even Donald Trump. So, you know, yeah, not even just Donald Trump, because you mentioned that Donald Trump, you know, in his bubble, he doesn't know, you know, because he doesn't have to take risks. That includes all the billionaires and top millionaires. You know, they don't have to take any risks, you know, because as long as their business is big enough to not fail, it won't fail. Even if it fails, the tax money will cover that.
Well, I feel that his worldview in itself with his outlook is jaded, because first of all, there was an important article this week. It wasn't on CNN. It was on a news website that what if he does have worldwide investments all over the world, which he actually does, in all countries like China, Turkey, Russia. What's going to happen to those investments? When he's president, he cannot maintain control of a private business. It's a conflict of interest. He won't be able to do it. He's going to have to turn it over to his children or somebody else. And even if he does do that, his natural tendency is going to be protection of those types of assets. And it just would be a big mess. And I just don't foresee him winning our presidency for a number of reasons.
No, he won't win. Of course, like I said before, Hillary's going to win. But if Donald Trump were to win, it actually, instead of a bad thing, it'll actually be a good thing, because if you've seen the protesting in Chicago, especially in Chicago, I mean, many other places, but I just want to mention especially Chicago, because that was a really big protest against Donald Trump. A lot of demonstrators there. But anyways, I mean, if Donald Trump was to become the president, imagine how many protests, imagine how many people will actually stand up and take rides and see the corruption and actually see it, you know, because Donald Trump doesn't hide it. He's like, he's out there open, blunt about it. You know, he says what he means, and, you know, there it is. But, you know, Hillary Clinton, obviously, there's a lot of corruption there, but, you know, she's pretty good at hiding it, that's for sure.
She's a criminal.
Yes, she is.
Well, you know, you guys see it differently than me, because I'm a little older than you. I do see the representation of the good that she's done in the world with healthcare and children's work. There are some policies I disagree with her on, but I do think that Donald Trump, whether he was president or not or today, could not walk into South Chicago and not get shot. I don't think his autonomy and his legitimacy extends into the poorest and most struggling parts of America. And I do think it would cause major damage around the world if he was elected, because it would show that America is truly racist, elitist, and uneducated. Now, those are strong words, but I really think that nobody in their right mind would really vote for him. But yet again, there are people who are doing the revenge vote to attack Hillary by supporting him. So I just think our country it can't stand on the foundations that it has, whether good, bad, you know, egalitarian, helping others, justice, rights, all that stuff. It's out the window in this election.
Well, check this out. Here's the thing. The worst evil people are the ones that hide their evilness. The worst evil people are the ones that do it under darkness, you know. Because why? Because when they do it and they hide it and they do it in darkness, you know, they get away with it and there's nothing we can do to stop them. Like Hillary Clinton. At least Donald Trump is openly, totally a jackass, and it's very easy to pick on him, and it's very easy to protest against him and really, you know, and really push him out, you know, out of presidency if he becomes the president. But Hillary Clinton, she can literally start a war and kill millions of people and get away with it a lot easier.
How did she do that, Albert?
She does it many times. I mean, you look at Hillary Clinton. She said, yes, war, Iraq. Yes, she voted yes for that. Hillary Clinton, you know, supported all the, you know, CIA operations in Haiti. You know, it killed a bunch of innocent people. Hillary Clinton also supported the war in Libya to kill a bunch of people. Hillary's a warmonger, you know, and, you know, she doesn't kill people indirectly, but, you know, her actions and her, you know, her will
I do think that you're only looking at it from one baseline perspective. First of all, Diane Feinstein also voted for the war in Iraq in 2003. The senators were deceived into believing that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Now, a liberal person like yourself would have supported someone like Senator Paul Wellstone. Did you know there were only two senators in 2003 who voted against supporting the war in Iraq? And the president has the right to occupy a country for 60 days before they even go into, in other words, if there's an emergency and they have to invade a country, they have 60 days to enter and invade that country before they seek congressional approval. It's the 1973 War Powers Act that came out of Vietnam because we had advisors in Vietnam 5 years before we even bothered with Congress.
Oh, yeah, we had CIA that put Saddam into power. You know, we supported him, you know, even before he became the dictator in Iraq. And we supported
actually,
him during
England occupied that country for many years, and Saddam wanted to create a unified Arab League, and he was a vice president under King Faisal, I mean right before King Faisal got out of there. And Saddam Hussein wasn't a terrible leader till he had already been in office 5 years. But he did rule for over 24 years and kill over 700,000 of his own people. With that, I'm going to bring John in quick. John, we only have 15 minutes of the show left, but how are you doing?
Excellent, Jane Hoffman. What's going on?
You're tardy for the party, and you need my approval to make music videos instead of radio shows.
Yes, I need a teleporter. I need time travel. But I had to help my brother Mikael. He's doing a Christian video. It's a Yeshua video. And, you know, it's just, the problem is we need like, a month or two just to go out and, you know, shoot stuff. And you just can't do it in a couple hours, unfortunately.
Well, I hope you can prepare. Not that I'm not mad at you. I'm glad you got to do that. But just let me know next time. Albert and John, you guys missed the most bomb caller in the first segment of the show. He was excellent from North Carolina. He even told us an Arabic phrase that you're supposed to say. If an Islamic person is attacking you and questioning whether you subscribe to Allah, he gave us a statement in Arabic you're supposed to say so they won't kill you. Now, Don was reluctant to comply to anything like that.
Well, by the way, just for reference, I may not remember, but what is the phrase?
I couldn't repeat it because it was too complicated. Something like la ma lakba la la la. I'd have to look it up, and he never.
They made it that way. That way, a Christian couldn't blurt it out before they knife him or they cut their head off.
Well, I hope it wasn't saying like I denounced Jesus and I subscribed to Allah. But we were going back into the history of Minnesota in which there was an explosion of African refugees. And in a central town in Minnesota, in St. Cloud, it went from 98% white to 10% Somalian in about 5 years. And there was a huge backlash and people were angry, pissed off, and openly hostile to the Somalians. It was a bad mix. And as Albert knows this, because he called the show last night, that there were 9 people in St. Cloud were stabbed last night by this Somalian national with a kitchen knife who had such a crappy knife he didn't bother to kill anybody. But he was shot dead by an off-duty police officer in the mall shortly after he committed that crime. So basically, he achieved nothing, and he lost his life for it.
Wow.
And that was one of 3 potential terrorist acts in the United States. There was one in New Jersey, one in New York, and one in Minnesota last night. But none of y'all seem to have cable.
Well, you know, they take away the enemy's guns, and when you take away guns, the knife stabbings just go up, And there's been a lot of knife stabbings recently within the last couple months, And
I'm surprised, Albert, that you would say that, because usually anti-gun, that whole argument, they go, if we didn't have these other weapons, the killings would go down. But I've kind of maintained people, if you really want to kill someone, you're going to, it's an anger and a rage to find whatever's available, I think.
Dude, you can use a shoe to kill someone. I've been always programmed.
I think knife killing is one of the most brutal styles of crime. Like, I just think, and ISIS is notorious for using that.
Well, during the Syrian war, during the bombing when Putin approved the bombing over there and, Russia planes started coming over and dropping bombs, and they blew up a big large of gun supplies for the Syrian rebels. But there was also some, gun trafficking that goes to, the Turkey and, then goes to, then the other countries like Jordan and then more to the left, of course, Israel, et cetera, gun trafficking. And, so now these, the people, maybe rebels or terrorists, whatever you want to call them, don't have guns, they just get angry and go out and try to prove a point, I guess, and grab a knife and stab people, It's like, if they don't have guns, they're just going to stab people. And that's what's been going on this late. Well, I didn't even say much because it also been happening last year too. So yeah, I would say just late last years.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think the thing is I wanted to point out that I did earlier with these individual isolated acts. Like this Somalian national was not affiliated with a major criminal international organization, but he's still. Pledged to the ISIS cause moments before he died. And I find that just as dangerous as someone who would be part of a larger network organization.
Yeah, there's a movie called Clean Skin, and it kind of deals with Muslim in England, and he's going to university there, meets some college students, and he gets radicalized by a cleric that's basically scouting, looking for talent, as it were. Like, he looks for people that are disenfranchised with the culture, that have Islamic ties or has, you know, kind of the appearance. And so when you see someone that's struggling, you know, maybe he's being persecuted, made fun of, or basically this cleric would kind of frequent places where students would hang out. And if he saw that there was any social problem, he would basically recruit. He kind of used the approach of, hi, you know, let me talk to you. I want to speak to you about something. And he would start saying, look at their decadence. Look how they treat you. Look how their culture is. And he would, you know, say, you know, their women, see how decadent they are, you know, the whores. And he would, you know, point it out. It's like, you're not like them. You have a higher calling and purpose. Come with me. And, you know, he started talking about, you know, don't dishonor the tradition of your family, your people, and start talking about, we don't establish what's right by peaceful negotiation, but by force we take it. And that's it's very interesting movie. Of course, it had to go to dramatic lengths, but it was in many ways depicted some attitudes that are prevalent, you know, and also an understanding, you know, looking from that position, it's like, we are decadent, you know, we are our, in a way we are the whore, you know, compared to how they live, their value system. But on the other hand, it also centered on how they dealt with things. Like they didn't just want to stop American culture. They wanted to kill and destroy it and just, you know, judge it basically in judgment, you know, by bloodshed. So it was very interesting.
Well, overall, the Islamic rejection of the Western world is comprehensive, but I work with Muslims at my job, and they don't reject me individually. Maybe they silently don't approve of my religion, but I think that we do live in a decadent culture, and they probably are flabbergasted by some of the things that they're exposed to. But
I think most Muslims are very peaceful, loving, like any person, any culture. You have people have different temperaments, and, you know, most people are sheep. So in a way, we're not aggressive, is what I'm saying. We just want to live our life. We want to find love. We want to have a peaceful, healthy existence. But then you have other people who are leaders who have aggressive temperaments, and they're going to be promoting a violent approach to life. And that's the problem, is when the sheep meet the wolves.
Well, about the sheep and the wolf, because everybody can be a sheep and a wolf at some point in their life, because everybody has phases, you know? You know when you have that phase when you're, like, into maybe racing and maybe you're into these particular movies? You know, it's kind of like a phase thing, I would say, you know? I'd say maybe some people at most of their point of their life will never into, you know, aggressive killing or whatever, and then later, you know, aggressive killing started happening in their neighborhood, and they just caught along with it, or they have to, get with the program and get back and defend themselves and go and do that, you know? And but anyways, I want to, you know, continue talking what we were talking about 5 minutes ago, and, you know,
sure.
5 minutes ago, we were talking about the stabbings, right? And, you know, how, you know, the terrorist acts, killing people. But here's the thing, because, you know, I mean, the word terrorist, right? I mean, you know, it's, you know, like, you know, killers that, you know, our gift of trying to take over the world. But, you know, you look at our terrorist organizations where they have no capability even anywhere close to taking the world. The only ones that are close to taking the world are superpowers like the United States and Russia, you know. The superpowers, they're actually getting close to taking over the world. But let's look at what are the real motives and what are the real, okay. Because we know for a fact, wherever there is tyranny, there will be rebels, gifts, right? The word of saying, right? Or wherever it is an oppressive regime, there will be resistance.
Regime.
Yes. So wherever there's oppressive regime, there's going to be resistance. That resistance might be freedom fighters or might be terrorists or might be a mix of both. So maybe some of those resistance are terrorists and some of those resistance are actually freedom fighters. And so the terrorists out there make the freedom fighters look bad. You know, they make them look bad. And so what we got going on is in places where we have tyranny and, like I mentioned before, where we have tyranny and oppressive regimes, they have resistance. And those resistance, what do we see on television are only the terrorists. The only thing we see on national television, on the Western media, are the terrorism. But we never see the freedom fighters on television. We never see them on television. All we see on television, we don't see freedom fighters on television. And I'll tell you why, because of the damn, like I said before, like the tyrannous and corrupt regime. And that's why.
Very good, Albert. I liked how you framed that. John, do you have a response?
You know what? I'm surprised, but I have to say, you know, like my father was raised kind of with the Amish background. He wasn't Amish necessarily, but grandfather was, and you know, he grew up with a lot of the concept of just being peaceful and loving, and of not killing. And when he got older in life, in his 30s or so, and had a family and had to struggle and fight, you know, as far as culturally to survive, he heard a story of a family that was brutally killed, you know, where the children were killed, the wife was killed and raped, and it was just terrible. And he said at that point in his life, he just came to the conclusion, some people just need to be killed. They need to be taken off the planet. They're just not redeemable. And it was a total shift in his mindset. I think the problem you run into is you have peaceful, loving people across the planet, and you either at some point get squished or stand up for yourself. Some of us can go our whole life and avoid that, but some of us are cornered and are faced with a fight or flight, and it gets a certain point, like in my age, it's like, I'm not running. You know, if you want to bring it, bring it. It's like, to me, life is not all that there is. There's life beyond life. So if you want to punch my ticket early, I can't kill myself as a Christian. But if you're going to provide the ticket to go, it's like, then it's a free pass. Like, go ahead, bring it on. And I'm not going to, you know, hesitate, because death is inevitable. It's not something like, wow, I got a bad deal. It's like, we will all die, and knowing when I will die, in a way, is kind of a blessing. It's nothing to fear, because it's all part of the natural order of what has to happen in life. So, I've always kind of thought Albert was leaning on the side of being a very, you know, peaceful, libertarian kind of person, but it's nice to see he has a firm perspective of life, that, you know, there is this violent nature that we have to deal with, and violent people, you know, we have to somehow survive.
Exactly. The violent nature that we see on television, on the Western media, on the corporate media, which is the mainstream media, that's the violent nature that we see, and we are filtered and completely concentrated and saturated with that violence on the media. But the media doesn't show doesn't show, like I said, doesn't show the freedom fighters. They show the terrorists.
Yes.
John, you can't be a Christian martyr by soliciting that you want to die on National Public Radio.
Oh, no. But maybe I can. Maybe, well, after you play one of my songs, you know, they have to make sure to play the music. That way we can tie it into that and I can get more hits, you know, on YouTube for my music.
Before we run out of time, like, I want to mention, like, if you were to do the nicest thing in the world, right, you were to do the greatest, nicest thing in the world and do a bunch of great deeds, you know, the average even amount of time you would get on television, if you would go out there and stab, let's just say, like, two or three people, you would get so much television time that compared to the all the good things you did. You can do a thing that's a thousand times good and do one thing that's one time worse than what the down thing good that you did, like maybe stab one person, and you will get 100 times more TV. About 1,000 times more TV time, and that's how the TV works, and that's how our media works for television.
And in a way, though, it's also it's the way people think, because the media, to a certain degree, they really don't care that much about violence. They care about ratings. So if people wanted to watch, you know, I used to say music-wise, if people bought accordion music played by chipmunks and people would buy it in mass, that's what they'll sell. They don't care whether it's rap or rock or whatever, as long as it sells and makes money. So when you have to get ratings on a news program, there's been times when they've tried to do good stories, happy feel-good stories, but nothing gets people watching like a little violence and bloodshed. It's just our nature. We're attracted to blood.
But here's another thing about that, too, because when we see violence and stuff on television, we get that repeated over times again by some people watching it. And I guess there's some people out there that actually they get motivated by watching that on television and then act upon it and try to support it. And so the more we show on television, the more we're putting that out there, more people to do it.
Yeah, this like when they made that cast, Albert Wynn and Shelby Carden went off the roof.
Exactly. So if you want to be famous, they're like, oh yeah, that guy got like 100 hours of TV time for stabbing one person. So maybe if I stab six people, I'm going to be super famous.
I don't think it works like that, but okay.
just so you guys know, it's the 2-minute warning. The show will cut off in 2 minutes. I just want to mention one thing, 30 seconds. When I was in journalism class at UCLA, there's been a lot of studies done on people who have published good news publishing, things that only good news, and the publications didn't last for more than a week. So that's kind of obvious and redundant. But I just thought I'd tell you anyway.
It is our nature, which kind of brings to the point. And this is just my subjective personal viewpoint, but it always brought me back to the concept that there's a devil or there's evil, that there's a God or there's good forces, and that we're in this battle. And, you know, you try to get away from it, like, okay, let's everyone all be peaceful and loving and kind, and yet some guy's got to come along and mess it all up. And it's just, you know, we just gotta have some freak show going on, and there just seems to be no way around that. I try to live in a peaceful environment. I work for someone that's attracted to drama, looking for drama, has to have it. Just gotta come every day. Just gotta find every hour has to find something to complain about, and that's just the way that person rolls. It's just not that person. It's indicative of society. There are people that just have to have negativity.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, they can always watch movies where they have drama and watch science fiction violence, but they don't have to watch the real violence.
true. I guess it's in the nature, though, whatever we fixate upon mentally, at some point, and here's the question, like, is there a devil